stay at home, I'm away. What do I do? What dangers do I expose myself to? What danger? There's a danger in having children. There's a danger in having relationships. There's a danger in getting married. There's a danger in living single. There's a, everywhere you look, there are dangers. We recognize that. Parental can be either parent or both. And we make teams as parents. Discipline is rendered ineffective when parents do not stand together. All this morning is for us as fathers and mothers to embrace the teaching and responsibility of parenting as the Bible gives. It's so sad when you have an Isaac and Rebecca situation where mom knows something about the boys that dad does not act on. And I don't know if Isaac didn't know it, why he favored the older one. I know why mom struggle between the boys before they were born, but they did not stand together, and we see how dangerous that is. And so I hope that this message fosters some parental discussion between us about our failures and our successes, and where we can succeed, where we can do better. I think that all of us as parents, my son and I had a moment of epiphany. I was listening to him struggle with how to be a good dad, a good father, at a time when it just feels like you can't do it right. And then I told him something, how that when I grew up, I didn't feel like I was really close to my father. And I decided that I would be closer to my boys than I was to my father. But when I had sons, I struggled again and again. How could I be closer to them? And he looked at me. We all think we have learned so much more than our parents until it's our turn, and it should humble us. And after a while, you can see nothing but your failures, so you throw up your hands and say, well, it's no use to try. I'll tell you something. As long as we are alive, we have to keep on being the right influence on our children and the stage of life where they are. And I am very convinced that stages and possibly talk about that in time for this. Now, permissiveness. I found some interesting definitions for permissiveness. And one means granting or tending to grant permission, tolerance. But the word also means efficient in firmness or control, indulgent, lax. The one that really got my attention, the one that I never thought of, is in biology, it's supporting growth or genetic replication as of a virus. In other words, your body's defense, granted to me, the individual cells in my body granted permission to this coronavirus, and they allowed it to move in and take over the cells of my body. There was a permissiveness going on that I didn't even know was happening. Permissive parents know when they're being too permissive. You know that. And it's usually in a negative sense when you allow something to start happening that should not be allowed to happen. It's a negative word. So the burden this morning is that we as parents, you as a parent individually, or even an adult, there's a lot of singles here, I understand that, but that we find our role maintaining control over ourselves and being the right kind of influence. As we see children who are self-willed, selfish, disobedient, disrespectful, hurtful, harmful, impatient, arrogant, spiteful, rebellious. Well, let's get. puts parents in the way of children's carnality. God puts you there. From the very outset, I would like to a disclaimer that in a perfect environment, children can go wrong. You know that you were not raised in a perfect environment, and you still have no excuse because God put you where He is and exposed you to what you were exposed to so that you would be wise and choose Him and not take your own way. Say that from the outset, because it's so easy for us to reach back and blame. And I found myself doing that. For the struggles of the problem, plugging in the next point, I'm not just talking about Adonijah. I'm talking about Steve Ebersole. And I see that, and I hate those things. And yet, nature. God has a plan. He wants parents. And I have two versions. I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 18. You know that verse. Genesis 18 and why God chose. And this is why God chose to put a blessing on Abraham. Because He knew that Abraham would stand up and take responsibility. Give direction to his children. And that He would establish a legacy. God was struggling about telling Abraham about what He was going to do to Sodom. And then He said, shall I hide from Abraham? Genesis 18, 17. The thing which I do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord. Justice and the judgment that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of. I know we get disillusioned studying the life of Israel because of their apostasy all the way from Egypt into the wilderness and settling in the book of Judges and go down through the kings and all the way through history. But it's the story of human nature. And yet there was a vision of a God who was at a standard of holiness. And they embraced that standard and they wanted to do what's right. And there was something different about them than any of the other peoples on the earth, including Margaret. But throughout all of them, I know this is God's plan. There's something for you. And I was brokenhearted again reading in Samuel this year. You know the story of Eli. You go to chapter. And I was saddened to see that a man of God didn't tell himself no, he was permissive with himself, and then he was permissive with his sons. Chapter 2, this is the story of Eli, verse 12, now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial, and he was worthless, they were undisciplined. It is not a devilish word, it just means without prophet. No gooders, maybe you could say. Sons of Eli were no gooders, but they were priests. How were they no gooders? Because they knew where the fat was, and they wanted the fat, and they took it. And then they went on in that, and after a while they gave themselves permission to commit adultery, even though they were leaders. And Eli didn't make them listen when they were little, and when they got big, he didn't stand up as the chief priest of the high priest. arch caved as well. His name is given in chapter 3 as being the fourth son of David. And I don't know whether Happy named her son or whether David named his son. And I am appalled by the whole problem of belief. I am appalled by the Old Testament. I am appalled by war. I am appalled by blood. I am so thankful to live in this dispensation. And I can hardly wait for the next. I can hardly wait until Jesus is king and he deals with all of this anarchy that's going on. But anyway, we'll let that alone. There's still some good things. Somebody had vision. And they named this little boy the fourth son David, whose mother's name outgoing, happy kind of lady, and everything's just fine, right? David. All these wives, all these sons. The name of the little boy, my Lord is Jehovah. Can you get a better name than that? Adonijah. My Lord is Jehovah. But in 1 Kings, chapter 1, we just read this story. The reason I chose this verse from this title is because of what it says in verse 5 says that Adonijah, the son of Haggai, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. He prepared his chariots and horsemen, and 50 men to run before him. And his father had not displeased him from his days, my center column reference says. In other words, when he was a little tyke running around, he was a little toddler, he caught up on his daddy's lap, and he hugged him, and he kissed him, and he had two times together. His dad ever said, why hast thou done so? And he also was a very goodly man, and his mother bare him Absalom. They had different moms. He was not a full-blooded sibling to Tamar and Absalom, but he was born next after Absalom. And he was very good. Now, I would like to just use this to talk about the problem that developed right here. And right here, David is old. Solomon has not been proclaimed the king. And it says that Adonijah exalted himself, saying, I will be king. I would like to identify the traits that are current in a child that is treated with the word entitlement. Entitlement is the belief that one is deserving of or entitled to certain privileges. We are all born believing that we should be the exception. Other people, we know how they often behave, but we believe that we are entitled. Little children, you watch them, and if there's a toy that they want, they just take it. They don't ask for permission. They just take it. And when little children grow up, this little boy grew up to be a man, and he said, you know what, my dad's old, he's not going to king anymore. I'm the next in line. Absolutely. Ammon's dead. I don't know what happened to Daniel Chilio. Nobody pays any attention to him. He's more of a scholar, bookish kind of person. I don't think he'd make a good king. So it may as well be me. And besides, Solomon, I know Dad's talked about him being king, but after all, it's a mess when he came from. I think I'm the one who deserves to be king. And so he just assumed that he deserved it more than what he was actually given. Didn't stay in his place. Jeroboam didn't stay in his place. He could have been king. God called him to that, but God never called him to change the world. David stayed in his place. Adonijah felt the sense of entitlement. I deserve it. And if I deserve it, then
He conferred with powerful people.
So I see manipulation.
I hate to tell you this, but I said I was going to be talking about more than just adoration. I'm talking about human nature. Manipulation is, I deserve it, then I am going to get. I looked at the word manipulation. It means to control or play upon by artful, unfair, or insidious ways and means. Insidious, what does that mean? Insidious means having a gradual subtle effect. And I thought of the coronavirus. I didn't even know that I had it for 2 days. This came in so sweet. After a while, nobody even realized what had happened. They didn't know what he was up to, but he had a goal. He didn't lay it all out, but he began to talk about what he wanted. He had a gradual, subtle effect because he had a goal in mind. And he did not care about the foreign structure and our God had his ordained authority. We see that being broken down. It's authority in family. It's authority in church. It's authority in national government. But a title that says, I don't have to listen on anybody. They're not perfect either, so why should I listen? So anarchy came in here, a lack of appreciation for the authority, and he sees authority as keeping from what he deserved to have. Now, I don't know, didn't know whether to make that, put this in all the exact right order. But you see what happened. He established himself as king. He did not have the blessing of those who were over him. He didn't care if Tad blessed him or not. He was going to take it and then make God bless him. Make Tad bless him someday. That's what he was going to do. Because after all, through his handsome appearance and and his personality and his influence with influential man like Cousin Joab and Abiathar the priest and Zadok. Well, he left out the other people that would not have been beside. He knew who he was influential with, and he knew who to pop out with in order to get what he wanted. Well, it all got exposed and came tumbling down on him. But I'd like to pick up on the rest of the story and how sad he goes. Let's see. He got exposed to his selfishness and I can fear because of Solomon. They heard about the story and established in Solomon. And Adonijah ran and he knew what to do to save his life, but he didn't have a change of heart. And it was caught hold on the horns of the altar. He didn't say sorry, but it was told Solomon said, "Behold, Adonijah feareth King Solomon." Chapter 1, verse 51. For lo, he hath caught hold of the horns of the altar, saying, let King Solomon swear unto me today that he will not slay his servant with the sword. Solomon said, if he will show himself a worthy man, there shall not a hair of him fall to the earth, but if wickedness shall be found in him, he shall die. Now, had he repented of his entitlement, had he repented of his manipulation, of his anarchy, of his pride, had he repented, had he changed in his heart, he just realized that the circumstances were against him and he couldn't do what he wanted to do now. And it all just went underground. And he was on the bed. What do you think you look like in everyday life? What did he think you looked like when he was around Dad or his brother? How did he act? Because there was an unconquered spirit in this young man. So he was unthankful and he looked around and what can I have? 1 Kings chapter 2. But he sees was the one who was with his father. There was a wife with his father, so he wasn't clean, but she was still there. The Bible calls it. So Adonijah continues with his thoughts of entitlement. I deserve this woman because I want her. And how can I manipulate him? So he again goes and behind the scenes talks to Solomon's mother. And he goes out around Solomon and he plans for what he wants because he was not thankful that his life was spared. He wasn't grateful for what he had. He deserved something more. And as he talked to his mom, I mean, his, what do you call him? I want Abishag, the Shunammite, to wife, and Bathsheba said, I have pity on you. I feel you probably deserve her. Yes, I'll go and talk to the king. So back to this manipulation. He gave himself, in his unthankfulness, he gives himself permission to take the position. I don't know how to over. But he says, you know, if I don't find that, you know, there's boundaries that God has for you, there's boundaries the church has for you, there's boundaries in your life that are put here for a blessing. And so he steps over. Now, why? Well, on the exception, this is a child. Father never told him no, and the Bible says that if you don't have rule over your own spirit, you're worse than a city without walls. And this is the tragedy of full-grown animals who grew up and weren't made to listen when they were little. They give themselves permission. You know, I look back at how easy it is to step over boundaries. And I say, Mother, but I have no excuse to blame anybody for my own or any transgressions. So I thought the word narcissism. And this is the problem of children, whether they're 6 months old or 2 years old, or whether they've learned how to hide it and they're 30 year old and they get business in family life and home life. Their private life, or wherever it is, all these things are there working in this person, driving him in this direction. Could Adonijah have seen this and changed it? Okay, let's talk about narcissism. The dictionary directed me to egoism. It means the same. It's a doctrine that all individual self-interest is the actual burden of all narcissism. In other words, it's all about I'm going to church, put money in the pocket, and doing the right things. I do it for me. Or whether I'm at home and nobody's watching me, and I'm on my phone, or nobody's watching me and I'm all by myself, it's still all about me. And this egoism, this selfishness thing, means another definition is excessive concern for oneself with or without exaggerating feelings of self-importance. That he was important enough to be the king. Can you be a narcissistic person and think that you're no good? Absolutely. It's not whether you think you're better than everyone else or if you think that you are worse than everyone else, but if every thought is about how can I get what I want? This is where he was. Because his dad never told him no. Dad didn't step in the way. So that's the problem. That's the problem. But we have
direction. Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself. And down here, we're going to do the same thing. My feet come down around, so I'll start down here. I'm righteous. Desires. Okay, this box. But here is, instead of parental correction, parental permissiveness. Here is the difference. Excuse me if I misspell it because I'm in a hurry. That's why I'm wasting it. Now, I told you the reason you need to share the world with us. I still believe the Bible. And I know there's a bad word in this passage, so I'm going to write a verse on it. Write a worse word than what the Bible uses next. Ye have forgotten, verse 5, the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. I don't care how old you are, you can be a grandpa and you're still a child. Hear to God. My son, despise thou not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art a youth of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom if ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers. And this is the vision that all of us are to have, is that we have a heavenly Father who's spanking us all of our life to try to keep us out of this mess that we are going to be. Trying to pull us back out of that mess. But he uses the illustration of what he wants to look at. We have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much more rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they merely for a few days chasten us after their own pleasure, but he for our own profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now, no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. So, parental correction yields grievous. First. And there it is. And parental permissiveness does not yield grievous first. You see what he's saying? The word grievous means causing great sorrow. That's the word I wanted. Grudging pettiness. I could write all that in here. I put it in there. Grudging. Did you ever like it when you were getting spanked? Were you ever cross at your dad for doing it or your mom? Were you ever rare when they were doing all that? It says it's grievous. It yields the peaceable fruit. If you want that with God, then accept this and say, thank you, Father. If you really care about me, if you want that with your children, then put that in the process. I'll talk a few more stories about that. Permissiveness produces reactive attachment. I love. She does what I want her to do.
from your parents, because they can never give you everything that you want, that you always want more than what you have. And it'll stop you in your tracks and make you miss it. Reactive attachment. Feel that alienation. Instead of getting your history. And I don't know what to do with this. I honestly do not know what to do with this, because I see people who get spanked, and they still have reactive attachment disorder. In other words, they are still high enough in a bond. I know people who are adults who look at the discipline they got as children and they hate it instead of loving it. But I also know I have a scene in my mind of walking into a bedroom and two little girls were in that bedroom and they were jumping on the bed and they were saying bad words. One of the little girls was mine, and one of the little girls was not mine. He was a fatherless little girl, and a dad. I had a dilemma. If I just scolded them, it wouldn't take care of the problem. So I got the paddle. I spanked on folks. Today, my daughter, today, when I come into the presence of that young lady who is now a mother herself, she loves to tell the story of the time when I became her dad because I spanked her and she knew she needed it. She can be so bitter and resentful against me, but she doesn't. And she always tells the story. I know if I met her today, she would tell me how. And she looks like she wants. There was a bonding, and it produced a peaceful fruit of righteousness and patience of God in the world today. And I know people who got this fruit, but they held on to their grievous hurts and grudging and did not feel the rest of them. You and I have a choice to make again, but not your parents, and your responsibility. All right? The act of attachment means alienation and narcissistic. Relationships. In other words, it's all about me. I'm no good. It's all about me. I'm better than everybody else, but it's still all about me. And lonely. And this morning, I want to beg you as parents. I started to talk about this 17th that I like. Treasure for a lifetime. If you have treasures, money, or your business, or anything means more than your family, then you will pay the price. Treasure your family, because that's the only treasure you can take for a whole lifetime, all the way back and all the way forward. But in the stages of child training, my first of all, train them to argue. Make them listen up, confront their carnality. Do not let them get away. No. Train to hearken and then teach to give them, I've been talking about 8 months, 9 months, 2, 3, 4 years old, and then they start asking decent questions and you start talking to them when you're in the way, you have family worship every day, you take time to talk about God and to pray for them, I listen to that song this morning, because there's anything about how long. You know, that's what I gather with families and they're planning their dad's funeral. You know what they talk about? How much money they have made is like they talk about the spiritual, the time when they saw the spiritual growth. That's what they treasure. That's what they embrace. That's what you want to remember. And it's not there. There's a big empty hole. Not only teach. Come to a place you can transition. They grow beyond your home when you train them to listen to other authorities and develop their own conscience and develop the world of social life. And this is where you're going off to school. And here conscience. Over here, you're just training them to listen, but here, you're helping them to listen to other authorities and to their own conscience. And then, from transition, there comes a stage of trust. But you know what? If you choose to trust them here, whenever you haven't trained them, if you try to get this all mixed up, you can never really trust them. And I see Dad trying to control their boys who are too big, and they won't listen on him. And they try to control, and it's all about, we got to make it look good. Everybody, or they'll think that I'm a failure, so we got to try to make you look good. Now, something is wrong, and there's conflict of will. But if you get this right, there's time to trust, and you turn loose. Now I say loose, or over. And I'm talking about when they're 18, 20, give them the resources that you can give. You can't give them everything. You can say, blessing. Fulfill the responsibility your Heavenly Father has. The calling that He has in your life. Are you a writer? It's not me. Go for it. God bless you. Are you a designer? That's me. God bless you. Go for it. Are you, you know, they have the list can go on. Yes, they can. Finally, the last stage is train goals. I still have to. I told this story in the audience, not realizing that there was a man in the audience who his children wanted him to stop driving because of his condition. And one evening, when